I thought walking away from manipulation would be the end of it. But shadows don't disappear when you turn off the light. They linger. They evolve. In Shadows of Redemption, I'm no longer the one pulling the strings. I'm the blueprint, the case study, the warning, and someone else, smarter, cleaner, more detached, is building something new from the ashes of what I destroyed. His name is Amir, and he doesn't want to become me. He wants to surpass me. As I uncover encrypted server logs, mimicry in real time, and the replication of my darkest psychological tactics, I come face to face with something more terrifying than being replaced, being perfected. So now, I make a choice, not to fight him, but to rewrite myself from within. This isn't about regaining control. It's about building a system for survival, without manipulation, without masks. This time, the algorithm isn't for others, it's for me. And if I fail, I don't just lose influence, I lose whatever's left of who I used to be. Oh, by the way, if you haven't already, we invite you to follow us on your favorite platform so you never miss a story. Control leaves residue, not on your hands, but in your thoughts, your pacing, your instinct to check every mirror, to study every room like it's a map, even when the game is over, even when no one's watching anymore. I thought episode 7 was the end. The confession, the silence, the unraveling. But endings are too neat for people like me, because once you learn to engineer emotion, you can't unsee the gears. And when you've spent years surviving through manipulation, even stillness feels like a trap. The strange part? I hadn't spoken in 2 days. Not out of guilt, but because words felt fake now. Every sentence came with a ghost of intention. A strategy I didn't mean to deploy. Even I'm sorry felt like a move I'd rehearsed too many times. I kept walking. Same school halls, same faces. But everything had shifted. Not just in how people saw me, but in how I saw them. Their laughter wasn't background noise anymore. It was unreachable. Their pain wasn't exploitable. It was real. And for the first time since I memorized psychology tips, group behavior models, and market manipulation language, I didn't feel like the smartest person in the room. I felt like the loneliest. I passed the bulletin board outside the library. Someone had pinned a quote, "The worst prison is the one we build with our own brilliance." No signature, no context, but it hit me harder than any tribunal. Student backlash, or leaked file ever did. Because that was it. That was the residue. The internal voice that still tried to predict outcomes. Still tried to control tone, pacing, outcome. Even now, without power, the manipulator was still alive inside me. Just quieter, for now. In class, I tried to focus. The teacher discussed ethical design and leadership, talked about positive influence, persuasion versus coercion, and true body intelligence and communication. A few months ago, I could have taught the lecture. No, I just listened. And it scared me how much I agreed. Because if I had heard those same words last semester, I would have turned them into weapons, slides into secrets, frameworks into facades. But today, they felt like truth, and I didn't know what to do with truth that wasn't engineered. That night, I opened a notebook and wrote one word, residue, then circled it over and over until the ink bled through the page. Because maybe that's all that's left of people like me. Not villains, not monsters, just residue of who we once were. And who we're terrified will become again. You don't always recognize your reflection in a mirror. Sometimes it shows up in a hallway, wearing someone else's face, using someone else's voice, but delivering your methods line for line, gesture for gesture, intention for intention. And when it happens, you don't feel flattered, you feel haunted. His name was Amir, transfer student, quiet, too quiet for his confidence to seem natural. He had the posture, the timing. The gaze, not assertive, not threatening, just present. Present in a way that only people who study human dynamics for leverage ever are. He made everyone feel comfortable, not through words, through pacing, through true body intelligence, through mirroring, subtle, micro-calibrated, neurologically tuned. I used to use those exact techniques when I first learned NLP, and watching him work was like watching a younger me, one who hadn't yet fallen apart. At first, I thought it was coincidence. But that changed when I overheard him at lunch. He was talking to a senior girl, someone emotionally raw after a recent breakup. He said, "They didn't leave you. They just abandoned the version of you they misunderstood." That was my phrase, exactly my phrase, from three semesters ago. Said during a peer wellness circle, I led for emotional influence modeling. Only five people had ever heard it. And I knew none of them would repeat it. But here it was, resurrected, repackaged, weaponized. Later that week, I saw Amir organizing a new student group, called it Perspective, and said it was for emotional clarity, vulnerability modeling, and conscious influence. I nearly laughed. That was my language, my pitch deck, only this time delivered with cleaner hands, with reputation intact. I watched him float through conversations, never interrupting, always adjusting. He positioned people like chess pieces, smiled the kind of smile that invites confession, offered art exploration nights, sketch what you're afraid to say, suggested ski technique sessions as metaphors for balance and precision. It was manipulation wrapped in mindfulness, and everyone was buying it. That night, I found myself in the same server room I once ruled from, not to control, not to spy, just to breathe. But even the machines didn't hum the same. Their rhythm used to sync with my mind. Now, they were indifferent, like the system had a new architect. And this time, it wasn't me. I'm not afraid of being forgotten. I'm afraid of being replaced. And Amir, he wasn't a threat to the school. He was a threat to the quiet I earned. Because if he builds what I once built, even if he does it better, that means the darkness in me wasn't an accident. It was a blueprint, and he's following it like gospel. There's a myth that once you walk away from power, it stops echoing. That if you delete the files, if you burn the notebooks, you can rewrite yourself. But what they don't tell you is this. Code remembers. Data doesn't forget because you grew a conscience. And somewhere inside the server room, my ghost was still whispering. I hadn't touched the old terminal since Evan's override. But after Amir's sudden rise, after the signs, the mimicry, the reused phrases, I needed answers. I needed to know if my blueprint had leaked or if it had resurrected itself. I logged in with a clean student ID, a new identity, unlinked, anonymized. The system was slower now. Archiving updates, firewall revisions, but deep within the admin layers, behind the interface that no student should ever access, I found it. A hidden directory labeled Mirror Fifi. Inside, encrypted recordings. Data points from old manipulation scenarios I had run. Emotional response graphs, social reaction trees, taglines like emotionally receptive under stress. Responds positively to mirrored vulnerability. Delay withdrawal. Flood with ethical language. These weren't mine anymore. They had been updated, modified, enhanced, and at the bottom of the structure, a text file. Last modified, 2 weeks ago. Author, Amir. I opened it. Inside were journal entries, clinical in tone, cold in insight, but terrifyingly accurate. The subject, formerly known for dominant control tendencies, now displays emotional hesitation and vulnerability, instability. Current posture, weakened. Prediction, loss of identity, potential for reinfection. Opportunity, extract refined methods without ethical corruption. I scrolled. Dozens of entries, each analyzing me, not as a person, as a system, my emotional shifts, my confessions, even my redemptive arc had been dissected. I wasn't just watching someone mimic me. I was being monitored, reverse-engineered, broken down to cognitive components and emotional conversion rates. I wasn't the manipulator anymore. I was the test case, a case study in how dark psychology could evolve under the guise of enlightenment. That night, I sat in front of the server window. My reflection stared back. Tired, wired, unraveling again. And behind it, on the screen, were words I couldn't unsee. Version 1 burned the bridges. Version 2 is learning how to build empires on the ashes. I thought I was watching my legacy unravel, but I was wrong. I wasn't witnessing the end of my influence. I was watching it evolve. Amir wasn't trying to replace me. He was trying to perfect me, to replicate the methods without the mess, to extract the skill without the sickness, to wield persuasion like a scalpel, sterile, precise, without guilt. But what he didn't realize is that you can't inherit darkness without carrying the infection. I used to believe what made me dangerous was knowledge, cognitive psychology, group behavior control, market emotion reading, social engineering. But what truly made me dangerous, what made me effective, was that I had no firewall between learning and using. And Amir? He was building the same neural machinery, but faster, cleaner, with upgraded tools and tactics cloaked in ethical terminology. He wasn't spreading fear, he was spreading clarity, and people were eating it up like peace. But it wasn't peace. It was just a smarter infection. I confronted him in the art room, empty, quiet. We didn't yell. That's not how manipulators fight. We spar with silence, with pauses, with controlled glances and timed empathy. I asked, "Why me?" He smiled, calm, practiced. "Because you built the prototype. I'm just refining it." And just like that, the room tilted. Not physically, psychologically. I had taught my version of the world how to manipulate to survive. He was teaching his version how to manipulate to lead. That's when I realized something worse than being copied, being surpassed. Because now, I wasn't a threat. I was a warning story. The cautionary tale whispered in the background of his ascent. He didn't need to destroy me. He needed me to exist as proof of what not to become. And in doing so, he made me essential, not as a person, as a template, a system, a virus turned case study. I walked out of the room hollowed, not broken, not angry, just obsolete. Because when your worst ideas survive longer than your best intentions, you realize influence is infection. And Amir was now version two. Not corrupted, just cleaner, more efficient, deadlier by design. There's something no one tells you about redemption. It doesn't arrive like a sunrise. It comes like code, fragmented, messy, tested, broken. And if you're lucky, rewritten. After Amir, after the confrontation, after realizing I was no longer the architect of the narrative, just the blueprint, it became clear I couldn't destroy what I created. But maybe I could design something new, not for others. For me, I opened a new notebook, the same one where I used to map out market psychology curves, group behavior simulations, manipulation arcs disguised as leadership growth. This time, blank page, black ink, no audience, no strategy. Just one idea, rebuild, don't reroute. I started writing, not apologies, not memoirs, a system, but not one for control, a framework for awareness, where every emotional reaction was logged, not for leverage, but for understanding. Where every manipulative instinct was flagged, tracked like a virus entering my bloodstream. And for every one of them, I built ethical countermeasures. If I felt the urge to mirror someone's pain, I paused. If I crafted my tone for influence, I rewrote the sentence. If I tried to use body language to shift power, I left the room. I called it the redemption algorithm, not because I thought it would save me, but because I needed something mechanical to keep me honest. Because people like me, we don't heal in poetry. We heal in structure, in sequence, in testing, in auditing the damage, in rerouting the output. Weeks passed. And for the first time in years, I didn't design people. I sat with them. No angle, no tactics, just discomfort. And somehow, that felt like the first real emotion I'd ever earned. One day, I passed Amir in the hallway. He nodded. But this time, I didn't nod back. I didn't need to, because I wasn't his prototype anymore. And he wasn't my legacy. We were both just systems, in motion, bound to the choices we'd coded into ourselves. I walked into the server room again, this time with nothing to hide. I uploaded the algorithm, made it public, labeled it Rethinking Control, a system for unlearning influence, attached my name. Full name, no aliases, no edits, no disclaimers, because maybe Redemption doesn't mean undoing the past. Maybe it means giving your worst work the context to become someone else's boundary. So they don't follow your path, they learn from its collapse. The algorithm isn't perfect, but for the first time, neither am I. And that might be the most honest code I've ever written.